It is Thursday, October 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump praises Pakistan for rescuing a Western couple and their three children held by the Afghan Taliban.
I want to thank the Pakistani government. I want to thank Pakistan.
Spain commemorates its national holiday as concerns over the future of the Catalonia region persist, and Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein faces possible legal trouble following reports he sexually harassed and abused women. It's all ahead. Pakistan's military has rescued a U.S.-Canadian family from a tribal region bordering Afghanistan nearly 5 years after they were abducted by militants. U.S. National Caitlin Coleman and her Canadian husband, Joshua Boyle, went missing in Afghanistan in 2012, and the Afghan Taliban later claimed responsibility for kidnapping them. President Donald Trump praised the release of the family from captivity from the Haqqani Network, a terrorist organization with ties to the Taliban.
The Pakistani government's cooperation is a sign that it is honoring America's wish that it do more to provide security in the region. And I want to thank the Pakistani government. I want to thank Pakistan. They worked very hard on this. And I believe they're starting to respect the United States again. It's very important. I think a lot of countries are starting to respect the United States of America once again. We hope to see this type of cooperation and teamwork in helping secure the release of remaining hostages and in our future joint counterterrorism operations.
I spoke with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad about the rescue.
Well, what we know from the Pakistani military is that this rescue operation was conducted on Wednesday, and based on what they are calling actionable intelligence provided by the United States. And they rescued the couple and their three children from this Kuram tribal district, which borders Afghanistan, and that has been a known militant hideout for years. And that's where, according to officials, these hostages were being shifted from Afghanistan on October the 11th, like on Wednesday. And that is when the Pakistani military says it received intelligence tip from the United States, from U.S. officials, and they conducted the operation and rescued Caitlin Coleman and Joshua Boyle and their three kids who were actually born while the couple was in captivity.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. But now apparently the family has already left for the United States?
Well, that's what we know from the military officials here, that they left Pakistan today to their country of origin. They did not say exactly to which country, but we understand that since Boyle is a Canadian national and Coleman, she's an American citizen, so it's not clear to which destination they have been sent back, but they have left Pakistan, and it's, you know, finally it brings an end to this ordeal that they were going through, like they were kidnapped somewhere in Afghanistan while they were there as tourists, and they were kidnapped, and later in 2012, and later the Taliban insurgency claimed that they were actually responsible for the kidnapping, and they released two video of these hostages last year. In fact, one in 2013 and the second one in 2016. And in both the video messages, Coleman actually begged the U.S. authorities to negotiate with the Taliban so that they can be safely released and they could go back to their home. And let me just tell you that Taliban, during all these years, were demanding release of some of their prisoners who are being held either in Afghan prisons or in Bagram, which is being controlled. This is the airbase, the largest airbase the U.S. Is running in Afghanistan. So the Taliban wanted some of their prisoners to be released in exchange for these hostages. But it now clearly is evident that if Pakistan Army has rescued and there was a joint operation, that, you know, these people have been safely released without meeting any demands of the militants. And also, we know for sure, as per the information the U.S. military and U.S. officials have been providing, that it was the Haqqani Network the terrorist organization that is part of the Taliban, who captured these Westerners and they were holding them. And this is a network, you know, that has been causing, you know, is a major irritant between the U.S. and Pakistan in terms of their bilateral relations, because U.S. officials and even Afghan leaders believe leaders of the Haqqani network are based on the Pakistani side of the border and conducting militant activities in Afghanistan against the U.S.-led forces and Afghan security forces. So that's why we see this statement that the White House has issued, which obviously describes this as a positive moment for U.S. Relationship with Pakistan, because there has been tension and there have been irritants in bilateral relations. And this now shows that Pakistan is willing to cooperate in terms of helping the U.S. efforts to stabilize Afghanistan and root out terrorism from this region.
Well, and also Lisa Curtis, who is the National Security Council Senior Director for South and Central Asia, she visited Islamabad and held talks with Pakistani officials at the foreign ministry.
Yeah, this has been really interesting that whether it was a coincidence or whether she was here and in her presence, this whole thing was revealed to the media, but we don't know for sure. But as you know, Lisa Curtis, she's known in Pakistan as one of the architects for President Trump's new Afghan policy that he announced in August. And that policy really criticized Pakistan for not doing enough to counter regional terrorism and to prevent the Taliban from using Pakistani sanctuaries, allegedly, according to Washington, for orchestrating attacks in Afghanistan.
That's Ayaz Ghul reporting from Islamabad, Pakistan. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, Sarah, there's been a story that's really captured attention in the U.S. over the past week or two, and it's the story of Harvey Weinstein. He's a Hollywood producer behind some of the biggest movies in recent years, films like Pulp Fiction, Good Will Hunting, Lord of the Rings trilogy, films that have won multiple Academy Awards. And Harvey Weinstein has been accused by a number of women of inappropriate sexual behavior, of harassment. I know you're going to be talking about this later on in the show, but
yes.
This has been a big topic on social media. A lot of celebrities are taking to social media to share their stories of harassment or instances where Weinstein has behaved inappropriately, including men. There are two actors, Terry Crews and James Vanderbeek, who have come forward and said they've been harassed by Hollywood executives, saying that this is a systemic problem in Hollywood. But actress Rose McGowan spoke out on Twitter against Weinstein and actor Ben Affleck, who she said helped to cover up for some of the abuse, or at least knew about it and didn't report it. And after Rose McGowan tweeted about Ben Affleck, her account was reportedly suspended by Twitter for violating its rules. Now, this has caused fans to be incensed. They're wondering why McGowan is being suspended for speaking out against sexual assault, especially in light of the fact that there are so many accounts on Twitter that are racist or sexist or homophobic that continue to post without any suspension from Twitter. So she has spoken out. She's taken to Instagram because, of course, she can't take to Twitter.
Yeah.
She's been suspended. She's gone on Instagram saying, speak up and let this be known. So this has become a big topic that people are rallying around actress Rose McGowan, saying that she should be allowed to speak out against this. And then there's another name that's come forward as all these people are talking about Harvey Weinstein, actor Jason Momoa. He's an actor on the incredibly popular Game of Thrones TV series, and he was on a panel at a convention back in 2011 where he said he enjoys working on the show because his character gets to rape beautiful women. This video, now 6 years later, has come to light. It is circulating widely on social media. People are ranging from disappointment to outrage. There's calls for him to be fired and not work in Hollywood. And yet another instance of this problem that's pervasive in the entertainment industry. Over the past couple of weeks, as these stories have broken, we've seen on social media especially all of these stories come out. And we've seen that this really is a huge problem in the entertainment industry, especially here in the U.S. And it's a problem that goes unchecked. So the hope is on social media, if there's any good that comes out of this, is that it will shine a light on sexual abuse and sexual harassment in Hollywood, and that will come to an end.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The United States withdraws from UNESCO. President Trump orders changes in the healthcare law. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the United States is sacrificing its ties with Turkey. And President Trump warns hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico of limits to federal aid. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers studying a Hubble Space Telescope image detected what they call the farthest inbound comet ever observed. The comet called C 2017K2 Pan-STARRS, or just simply K2, was spotted beyond the orbit of Saturn at nearly 2.4 billion kilometers from the Sun. Despite its distance, the slight warmth of the Sun allowed K2 to develop a nearly 130,000-kilometer-wide coma, which is a comet's fuzzy cloud of dust that surrounds its frozen, solid core of gas and dust. Scientists who made the detection speculate that the K2 comet has been on the move for millions of years. The scientists say that it'll continue its journey toward the Sun, where it'll make its closest approach just beyond Mars orbit in 2022. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at possible legal action against Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. Spain observed its National Day Thursday, the day explorer Christopher Columbus, with backing from the Spanish throne, first set foot in the Americas in 1492. Meanwhile, Madrid gave the region of Catalonia until next week to determine whether it's seeking independence.
El Consejo de Ministros ha acordado esta mañana.
After meeting with his cabinet, Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy demanded that the Catalan government confirm whether it plans to succeed, citing confusion left by the remarks Tuesday by regional president Carlos Puigdemont. Mr. Rajoy said clarity is required before invoking Article 155 of the Constitution. That would allow the national government the ability to dissolve the regional administration, assume direct rule, and call for new elections. Catalonia held an independence referendum October 1st, and Puigdemont said that that gave him a mandate to break with Madrid, but he suspended it pending talks on the matter. Stuart King is a senior lecturer in Spanish and Catalan culture and language at Australia's Monash University. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Catalonia is in a tough spot.
They are very much in a box at this stage. They've been hoping that there would be international mediation, and that hasn't been forthcoming. No surprise, really. No European government wants to get involved in questions of secession of minority groups or stateless nations. And it's putting the ball back in the Catalans' court to see how far they want to take it.
And what do you think their likely response will be?
Oh, that's a $64,000 question, isn't it? I'm really not sure. This is playing out in a very unusual way. What we have in the Catalan Parliament is a coalition government, and one of the junior partners, which is the CUP, is a grassroots left-wing movement, and they are insisting that the majority partner fulfill its obligations according to what it committed to do prior to the referendum. If not, they will withdraw support for that government, which means the government will collapse and there'll be new elections in Catalonia, and we'll be back where we were beforehand.
Both politicians, Mr. Puigdemont and Mr. Rajoy, have to walk a fine line, don't they? After all, they are part of a coalition government.
They are both parts of coalition governments, yes. But the coalition, I would say the coalition government in Spain is more united on this matter. The Spanish Socialist Party and the Popular Party, the two major parties, are very much, although they are not popular, sorry, the Socialist Party is not in government with the Popular Party, but they very much do support the measures taken by the Rajoy government.
Stuart, where does the independence movement in Catalonia go now?
This referendum has not necessarily been about obtaining independence at this particular time. I think the aim of it was to take a very big first step and to try to get as much international support as possible. Catalonia is now known around the world, and I think that if they are unsuccessful at this point, those in favour of independence will continue to push for some form of independence in the future, hoping that they will get support internationally to help mediate with the Spanish government. But I don't think they realistically recognised that they were going to get, or realistically believed that they were going to get independence at this point.
Stuart King of Monash University in Australia. He said those he knows backing independence in Catalonia feel betrayed by Puigdemont's government, saying his ambiguous remarks Tuesday represented a political ploy to ensure his government's survival. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. The sexual harassment scandal surrounding one of Hollywood's most powerful movie producers deepened this week as a report published in the New Yorker magazine accused Harvey Weinstein of raping 3 women. The story said 16 current and former employees of the Weinstein Company and Miramax either witnessed or knew of Weinstein's sexual abuse. According to the report, employees said Weinstein's sexual deviancy was widely known. Among the accusers are some of Hollywood's A-listers, including Angelina Jolie, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Rosanna Arquette. International Edition's Lori London spoke to San Diego criminal defense attorney David Shapiro about what legal problems these allegations could pose for Weinstein.
Well, there's a couple of different things going on here that he's facing criminally. There's in multiple states. You know, some of the charges may be barred by statute of limitations. Doesn't mean it's the last we've heard of it in a criminal courthouse. All it means is that certain states and their prosecutorial agencies might not be able to file criminal charges against them, particularly in New York, depending on the charges, particularly in California, depending on the charges as well. So it all depends on how serious the accusations are, what state they could be prosecuted, and whether or not they're going to use some of these prior uncharged acts to basically bolster the whatever it ultimately does get charged.
But if there are charges, what could they potentially be? I mean, we've heard the word rape used, we've heard harassment, but it sounds like, you know, even in one situation there was something that was on tape, but there were no charges filed in that situation.
Correct. Yeah, in New York, my understanding of statute of limitations is if it's an aggravated sexual assault, there are no statute of limitations on it. So if there's something involving, you know, forcible sexual contact, like skin to skin or oral sex or something along those lines, I don't think they would be barred from filing charges, at least not by the statute of limitations. The one that was on the recording, my understanding, would have only been a misdemeanor accusation, basically just like a groping over the clothes, not basically to minimize it, but basically in the grand scheme of things being probably a misdemeanor charge. And that probably would be barred by the statute of limitations in New York. In California, for most misdemeanors, it's 1 year from the date of the offense. Just because something's not barred by the statute of limitations doesn't mean it's an automatic file for the prosecution. There's a lot of other factors they need to look into as well.
We are hearing accusations of rape. Now, that's a crime.
Correct.
But after the fact, would that be hard to prosecute?
Well, after the fact, what they don't have is they won't have, or at least based on my understanding of everything, they won't have DNA.
Right.
They don't have a confession or a recording of him admitting to anything similar to the one incident in New York, which appears to be one of the least serious accusations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they have are the motivations of these women coming forward and why after a certain period of time they would all come forward at once, and whether their primary motivation is to seek justice and prevent this from happening if it did in fact happen to other people, or if their primary motivation is to get on the gravy train, so to speak, and, you know, take down this guy and get some of his money in the process. That's something that his defense attorneys, assuming criminal charges are filed, will certainly have a lot of ammunition with, because he's certainly going to assemble the best team money could buy, and they're certainly going to look at the length of time between alleged criminal acts and their ultimate disclosures, and that's something they're going to have a lot to work with. From a defense standpoint,
there are certainly a lot of women coming out with a lot of accusations. So would you say, is it safe to say that he does face a myriad of legal woes at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he's looking at criminal charges, and even if criminal charges don't come out, he's looking at civil charges. The burden of proof is significantly lower in civil charges. There may be less of an issue with statute of limitations in civil court, you know, not to mention an expedited divorce. My understanding is his wife has filed paperwork and getting everything going there, probably trying to get out with her share of things before payouts come into play, criminal restitution.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines as well. So he's dealing with this pretty much any and all angles, certainly not out of hot water, even if no criminal charges come of it.
Do you think there's any possibility he could actually face jail time?
Yeah, I mean, if he's charged with a crime, I mean, similar type conduct in California, it would almost be a slam dunk that he would face significant state prison time, not to mention have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life if prosecuted in California. You know, there's a lot of serious accusations here, and if a tenth of these accusations are true, and if they could be prosecuted legally, and if a jury will convict based on that evidence, you know, he definitely will be facing state prison time.
That's San Diego criminal defense attorney David Shapiro. He spoke to International Edition's Lori London. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is in mourning after the horrific shooting that took place at an outdoor music concert in Las Vegas October 1st that claimed the lives of 58 people and wounded hundreds more. The shooter was found dead from apparently self-inflicted wounds in the hotel room where he carried out the attack. Investigators have not yet attributed a motive for the largest mass shooting in modern American history, but the FBI has said no evidence of terrorism has emerged so far. President Donald Trump flew to Las Vegas to meet with victims of the massacre and speak to first responders, law enforcement officials, and civilians who came to the aid of their countrymen during the attack. There are many such people in the latter category, men like Jonathan Smith, who was credited with saving the lives of at least 30 people until he was felled by two bullets and dragged to safety by off-duty policeman Tom McGrath, or cab driver John Zerquera Jimenez, who repeatedly drove into danger to transport people away from the carnage. In his remarks to law enforcement officials, President Trump asked God to bless the men and women who protect us and bring healing to the families of the wounded, the injured, and the fallen. He also said, "In the depths of horror, we will always find hope in the men and women who risk their lives for ours."
We cannot be defined by the evil that threatens us or the violence that incites such terror. We're defined by our love, our caring, and our courage. In the darkest moments, what shines most brightly is the goodness that thrives in the hearts of our people.
"We are blessed to be surrounded with heroes," President Trump said.
As one eyewitness recounted this week, while everyone else was crouching, police officers were standing up as targets, just trying to direct people and tell them where to go. Parents and spouses used their own bodies as shields to protect their loved ones. Americans dashed into a hail of bullets, to rescue total strangers.
In the months ahead, President Trump said, we will all have to struggle with the horror of what has unfolded, but we will struggle through it together. We will endure the pain together, and we will overcome together as Americans.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.